So the question was asked, if there are things that the Torah doesn't overtly obligate, if there are things that the Torah doesn't overtly obligate us to do, yet they're within the spirit of the law, then what would be the difference between if it's obligatory or not? So the difference would be, there would be a few differences. I can't cover all of them now because some of them involve a say doche lota say, some of them involve how much money you have to spend, some of them involve how much do you have to, how far do you have to go out in order to do it. Meaning we know there's a certain amount I have to invest for a proactive mitzvah, there's a certain amount I have to invest in order to ensure I don't transgress a prohibition, there's a certain amount I have to invest for a rabbinic institution, there's a certain amount for a minhag. Each one has their weight. So there are many differences whether something is overt or not. It's a little hard to encompass all the differences whether the Torah overtly obligates something or not. Generally, we see that, take the mitzvah of tzitzis. It says you're not obligated to wear tzitzis if you're not wearing a four-cornered garment, but if you do wear a four-cornered garment and you wear tzitzit, so that affords protection. And bishat ritcha, there's a moment of anger from above, God forbid there's a suicide bomber or who knows what else, so then tzitzis affords protection against that. So you'll say, did that guy do something wrong? He's not wearing tzitzit, he didn't do anything wrong. But you see, then when life plays itself out, so to speak, God says, you didn't go beyond the call of duty, I'm not going beyond the call of duty.
But then you have a question on the one who wears tzitzit and is in a situation where something does happen, they're not offering protection.
You never know, you know, there's a whole system up there. We don't know the system. It's like you asked the doctor, you told me, if I don't smoke, then I won't have a congestive heart failure. Right, okay. But there are a lot of other factors. I had low cholesterol. I had this, I had that, right? There are a lot of factors. Okay.
Well, I understand 100%. I'm saying that you're saying that the difference is in the level of your obligation to avoid it, your struggle to avoid it.
One of the differences is going to be how far do you have to go out to do it. You'll ask me, does God want you to do this? Yes. But how responsible am I to do it? Sometimes there are things which we say, if you did it, you did a good thing, but you didn't sin if you didn't do it. Sometimes we say, if you didn't do it, that's bad. But you can't say that it's as obligatory as an overt commandment in the Torah. Once you're dealing with the spirit of the law, so then when it's going to come to conflict with other things, it's going to have a different weight. Both ways. Look, you. The simplest example is divorce. A person can say, I'm allowed to get divorced, right? But what about the woman's feelings? But the Torah told me I'm allowed to get divorced, right? But that doesn't mean that you didn't trample on her feelings. So there are things where we're taught the spirit is against it. The Talmud ends Gittin by telling us, even the Mizbeach weeps. Even the Mizbeach that's supposed to make peace between man and heaven, so to speak, says, I can't make peace between this man and heaven. He can't make peace with his own wife. There's a... So you'll say, is it wrong to get divorced? No, sometimes it's right. That's why the Torah gave it to us. Sometimes it's right, sometimes it's wrong. But there are many examples in the Torah where the Torah says, you have room to do it. Eishes yifas toar, the woman taken at war. Is it prohibited? No. Is it the right thing? Sometimes. And sometimes it's the wrong thing. When King David did it, it was the wrong thing. Rebelling against the king. Is it prohibited to rebel against the king? Doesn't overtly say that. The way the Rambam words it is, he who rebels can get killed by the king. Doesn't say you're not allowed to rebel. It says that if you rebel, the king can kill you. Okay, so then you'll ask me, Som tasim lecha melech, shetei moro alecha. Fine, needs work. But at the end of the day, there are things in the Torah where the Torah says at your own risk. Or sometimes the Torah will say it's right, sometimes the Torah will say it's wrong. And it's up to you to understand the time you're living in, the scenario you're in, to call the shot on whether it's right or wrong.
Are you saying that these things that are wrong are not found in the Torah?
Sometimes the Torah leaves it to us to understand the scenario.
So how can you say that all the knowledge and all the wisdom that we need
It's not absent. The Torah is supposed to train us and give us the tools to correctly evaluate the world we live in and make the right decision. The people in that city should have understood that if Jerusalem is burning to the ground, then they should be in ash and they should be davening. They shouldn't be lighting candles. Now that you know that Talmud, we moved apartments. My wife was on pregnancy watch and I couldn't leave the house. I had to deal with kids. There was no one there to do it. And Gush Katif was being evacuated from their homes. For weeks or maybe months, we didn't unpack. We lived out of one or two boxes. Because we said, how could we build our own house when so many people are living out of boxes and they don't have where to go? So this idea, this sensitivity is something that a person is supposed to have, I think, and that's part of what the Talmud was teaching us when it told us this story. So as you learn Torah, you're supposed to develop certain sensitivities. And those sensitivities are supposed to be there when a person is faced with these scenarios where the Torah doesn't overtly say permitted or prohibited, and it's up to the person to call the shot.
You're saying that these things are found in the Torah as being byproducts of learning Torah?
Yeah. There are many things where the Torah is going to develop a sensitivity. Kaspo lo natan v'neshech. King David came and said, even to a non-Jew, when it came time to give a loan, he wouldn't take any interest. And until King David came, where was it? It was part of the tradition. It was part of the sensitivity that one was supposed to gain from the Torah. That even when he gives a loan to a non-Jew, if he wants to be a really pious person, he'll give it without interest. Look at that. So you and I could glean that wisdom from the Talmud that derives it from the verse in Tehillim. But what about the people who lived before David HaMelech? It's part of the spirit of what we're supposed to get from the Torah, about how to be kind people. So someone, who said it? I don't remember. I do remember. Someone got up and said 2-3 weeks ago, there's a prohibition of Lashon Hara about non-Jews. It's not true. The prohibition of Lashon Hara is for Jews. There's a prohibition. You can't damage them. The whole idea of Lashon Hara is, I said something which inadvertently, in the long run, might cause harm. It's not direct harm. That's damages. It doesn't say you're allowed to say libel or damage someone else overtly. You can't go and defame someone. That's true. But Lashon Hara is more sensitive than that. Now you'll ask me, does the Torah want you to go and say Lashon Hara about a non-Jew? No. That's a sensitivity. But you can't say the Torah told me I'm not allowed to. The Torah prohibited me from saying Lashon Hara. And then the Torah wanted me to develop that sensitivity, to be a person who speaks positively. But there's that fine line between what's biblically prohibited and what's part of the spirit of where the Torah wanted me to go. Now, part of the idea is also that it's something you grow into. People come to Machon Meir, I say, wait, keep Shabbos, keep Kashrus. Don't go looking for all the things that are the spirit of the law. You'll get there. but first you have to do what it says. And as you get used to that, you'll grow into it. And you understand that this is an area that could be very dangerous, because people, if they don't have the guidance of Chazal, then they could take the spirit of the law very far in the wrong direction. All you have to do is open a newspaper and see who Obama met this week. Don't open the newspaper, and you don't want to vomit. Don't read who Obama met this week. There are a bunch of people who thought they were taking the spirit of the law, and they're the shame of the Jewish people today. The way they express themselves and the way they let him express himself. Okay, that's not the spirit of the law. The second you're dealing with the spirit of the law, you better know what you're talking about, and you better have it really well based. Because otherwise you could destroy the whole Torah and say it's the spirit of the law. So you ask me a question for something that's really sensitive. But okay, within the Talmud we do have directions, we do have tradition, and if you don't have a proof for it in the Talmud, And even then, you better consult with someone who really knows what he's talking about. Sure. Look, there's a whole group today that calls themselves Neturei Karta. And they say, in the spirit of the law, we should go and side with the Palestinians and encourage them to come back and we'll make peace with them. So they wear big black hats and they dress like Hasidim and they call themselves Neturei Karta. and people consider them crazy. Who are these people? They're a small group that makes a lot of noise. But, what? Okay, you're better off that way. But I'm just saying, you see how far, people can get with this idea of the spirit of the law. So it's a very dangerous question what you asked me. The concept exists, but its application really is complex and has to be done in counsel with someone who's learned enough to know how to do it. Again?
Their source.
We shouldn't spend time on that.
So the Torah.